Do you enjoy dark comedy, puns, and laughter? If so, come join two good brothers, John and Patrick, as we discuss some of the craziest ways people die. That's so bizarre, strange, and borderline comical, that'll leave you dumbfounded. You can follow this podcast on all major platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many more. And make sure to follow us on social media on Instagram at The Dumbfounded Pod and on Twitter at TDFDPod. And remember, think ahead, don't be dumbfounded.
Hi, y'all, and welcome to Kudzu Killers, Homicide, and Sweet Tea, where we like to share gothic tales of Southern-style murder.
I'm Lark, and that other voice you hear is Kim. Each week, we take turns telling you the gruesome details of serial killers, spree killers, and just plain old mean people that we find interesting, and we hope you do too. Sometimes quirky and weird, but always respectful.
So sit back, grab your glass of iced tea, relax, and let us take you step by step through our story. And feel free to shoot us a comment on a specific episode on our blog at kudzukillerspodcast.blogspot.com.
Now, let's get on with the show. And thanks for coming back today again. This is a particularly gruesome story. So if you are sensitive to gore, this is not going to be your jam. So you might want to skip today's episode.
But it's right up my jam.
Well, I kind of think it might be several people, but I'm just saying, if you're interested in what monsters humans can really be, then turn up the volume. This is our little warning disclaimer. We don't usually do this, but okay. So our story today comes to us by popular demand, actually. And since y'all have asked about this horrific tale, and hopefully we're going to deliver. So as stories are told and retold, transforming into folklore, rumors have muddied the facts throughout the years. But there are a few details that have stood the test of time, and our information comes from a combination of old newspaper accounts, eyewitness interviews, and neighborhood hearsay. Gossip. So with all that in mind, the one newspaper in particular was called the New Orleans Bee, which was sort of the National Enquirer of its day. So you can take that and consider the source, right? So depending on if you love stories of hauntings, horror, or just love New Orleans like Kim and I do, you may have already heard of the atrocities and torture that took place at 1140 Royal Street in the LaLaurie Mansion. Or you may have first heard about the LaLaurie Mansion and Delphine LaLaurie, where slaves were brutally mutilated and tortured by their mistress from the Netflix show American Horror Story. And Kathy Bates, one of our famous people from Memphis, right, Kim? She's from Memphis? Yeah.
Yep.
And she loves to play these horrible people, and we love her for that. Anyway, the mansion and Delphine both played a big part in the American Horror Story franchise, but the house itself wasn't filmed there. That's not where they filmed it. They actually filmed still in the French Quarter in a house called the German Grima at 820 St. Louis Street. So, a little history on the house there and where to find it, etc. So, Marie Delphine was born in 1775, daughter of Louis Bartholomew Chevalier de McCarthy, and came from a long line of French military men who had previously set down deep roots in New Orleans, and especially New Orleans society. She was first married on June the 11th, 1800, to Don Ramon de Lopez y Angulo. When he died on March 26th, 1804, in Havana, Cuba, she quickly married Jean Blanc in 1808. Now, he turned around and died in 1816. While the circumstances of the deaths of her first two husbands are unknown, Her third and final marriage was June the 12th in 1825. Now, during the course of all of this, she had a total of 5 children. Now, this marriage caused a lot of controversy. It was to a man called Dr. Leonard Louis Nicholas Leroux, who was a transplant from France. He was a physician, though today we might consider him more of a chiropractor. And okay. Their meeting really wasn't pure luck. One of Delphine's daughters from her second marriage had some deformities along her spine, and she was subsequently ill and sick a lot. And so he was hired to cure this girl. So Louis used all sorts of medical equipment that looked quite torturous, and none of it ever really worked. I think it got shuffled up to the attic, where we'll get to in a minute.
Have you ever been to a museum with those devices? Some of them are insane. That they tortured people with back then.
Well, they thought it was all in the sake of healing you and helping you. And, you know, that went on. This has gone on for decades. But there's actually a wax museum, I think, in New Orleans that depicts all this insanity. But I have never been there because those things creep me out a little more than the real stuff. So meanwhile, Delphine's daughter didn't get any better. But Delphine herself was enamored with the physician, even though she was nearly 20 years older than him.
Cool.
So, yeah. She's a cougar, man.
That's right.
Much like Kim and my own mother. But anyway, letters show that Lalaurie departed New Orleans for France because he was just not that into her, okay? And that his brother actually had to talk him into returning back to New Orleans after discovering that Delphine was pregnant. So So she came from high society. So he came back and did the right thing and married her. She really pulled him up in the world, basically. So in 1831, she purchased the property at 1140 Royal Street, where she would live with her handsome doctor husband and 2 of her children. So again, it wasn't his money, it was hers and her status. But the marriage was pretty turbulent and it wasn't a happy one. Neighbors overheard lots of arguing and constant bickering, and they weren't surprised at all when he packed his bags and moved out sometime in the early months of 1834. Wow. Disappearing, never to be heard of again. This time he was gone for good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
was losing? He?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Or did he go with the other 2 husbands?
He was never to be heard from again. Let's just say that. So losing her husband reportedly drove Delphine mad, and rumors began to spread that she was harming her slaves. So I think she was taking out all of her angst out on these poor people. And he had also left all that equipment, keep in mind, right?
Oh, no.
Right. So she'd already had a few run-ins with the police on several occasions that might take the slaves away from her. They'd take them away, but they never could prove anything. And her family had too many people in high places to vouch for her character. So she'd always get out of any trouble. And they'd always return the slaves, right?
Great. Mm-hmm.
So she was always let off and the slaves were always brought back until an incident witnessed by one of her neighbors in 1833 proved a little more about how she was pretty abusive. So allegedly, because a lot of this is gossip, but I think this part is true, they actually found this little girl later in the backyard. Buried. So allegedly a 12-year-old slave girl by the name of Leah was brushing her hair, and you know, she's trying to dress her hair, and she's only 12. What 12-year-old can dress her hair? And the kid hit a snag and pulled it too hard. After a particularly hard yank or two, Delphine flew into a rage and she snatched up a horse whip and she chased the young girl through the house and out onto the balcony. Well, you on the balcony now. So the neighbors saw her beat the child. And she beat her until she finally fell to her death in the courtyard.
Oh, no.
Yep. So now the council has reason to finally investigate and prosecute. So at that time, New Orleans is really progressive, believe it or not. I mean, they had laws that protected slaves from unusual cruel punish.
Right, yeah.
They had mistreatment of slaves was illegal, and society began to shun Lalaurie after this particular event. So everyone's suspicions were finally coming to light. Now, upon closer inspection by the courts, all of her slaves were again taken away from her. But one by one, she purchased them all back. So the events within 1140 Royal Street quieted for a while until a fateful night in 1834. So again, if this grosses you out, here's the gross out alert, gross out, gross out alert. Okay, so moving on. On the morning of April the 10th, 1834, a fire broke out. Allegedly, the fire started on purpose by a 70-year-old slave woman who was chained to the stove in the kitchen as a punishment.
Good for her.
Yep. Well, she started the fire and she kind of knew she was going to die. She felt like she was probably going to die, but she did it anyway just to call attention to what was going on.
Right.
Because she also knew what was going on in the rest of the house, and she knew particularly what was going on upstairs in the attic.
Oh, no.
If you haven't seen the American Horror Story or you haven't been to New Orleans, I can't even imagine that one. but this is like a...
We are an international show, so...
Well...
A lot of people out there...
Yeah. Well, it's... well, it's a three-story kind of building. It encompasses... Almost, I don't want to say a whole block, but it's pretty big. I mean, it's very, very big. And it's three-story with an attic. So we're talking about the attic, basically. And the fire started to spread. And as it blazed, people, neighbors, started to rush in, you know, to save those people in the house. And then they suddenly started to realize, hey, where are the servants?
Yeah.
There aren't any servants that are leaving this inflamed place, you know? So they put out the fire and they start to look around and they're running up and down to the different floors. And so they finally run all the way up to the attic and they find seven slaves in the attic wearing iron collars.
Oh, no.
With sort of sharpened points.
Like those spiked collars you see in the old pictures, yeah.
Exactly. In addition to them clearly having been starved and tortured, I mean, this was just an absolute dungeon,
Were they dead or were they alive or, you know?
No, these were the live ones because there were other dead ones up there, but these were the live ones.
Okay.
So, sadly, these folks were nude and chained to the walls, and some of them were strapped to makeshift operating tables.
Oh, no.
I know. And others were confined in cages that had been made for animals, and they'd obviously undergone various elaborate forms of torture and mutilation. And remember all of her last husband's doctor equipment, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that it took them a while to get these folks loose from all of that, but also uncorroborated reports from eyewitnesses claimed that the seven live slaves had been beaten and bruised and bloodied to basically within an inch of their lives. Their eyes have been gouged out, a few of them, not all of them, obviously. Their skin had been flayed.
Flayed means peeled off of them while they're alive, people that don't know.
Right. And they were cutting hunks off of their different thighs and butt and wherever they had like a large portion of flesh.
Well, did this involve cannibalism and stuff too?
Or was she
just doing
it
for jollies?
No, I think she was just being, you know, inflicting pain. I don't think she ever, you know, actually went there and took it down to the cook. That I found nothing to say that. But
as
we said, their eyes were gouged out. Their skin was flayed. This is the one that really got me. Their mouths were filled with excrement and sewn shut.
Oh.
That got me. That really grossed me out.
She did all of this, or do they know if?
I think she had to have some help, but I never heard any. Well, I never read anybody who was like her henchman or her helper. Mm-hmm. Now, her two daughters that lived in the house with them, they would try to sneak the different slaves food or help, and she would beat the daughters if she caught them being kind, supposedly. Now, another particularly disturbing report, they found another woman that was up there. And this lady, her bones had been broken and reset so that when they grew back together, she sort of resembled a broken crab when she, you know, tried to move, or I'm sure she couldn't move, you know, but.
I'm trying to picture this. Why would she?
Well, I picture kind of a, just a, you know, a horrible breaking your bones backwards sort of thing, you know. I just can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. And then she's, then it says that another woman was wrapped in human intestines, probably her own.
Oh.
Now, this next one really gets me too. Another witness claims that there were people that had holes drilled in their skulls and wooden spoons that had been stuck into their skulls to, like, stir their brains around. Yeah. I mean, they're just, oh my God, there is no bounds to this horror. So the tales told later from the rescued slaves, because they did rescue seven of them. Several of them died later, but they didn't die in that moment or the fire. But later they told that, you know, her sadistic appetite just was never appeased and it had no boundaries. I mean, what next, you know? Don't even ask what next. And, you know, the death of other slaves had really just been a sweet mercy and release. So
right, they were probably praying for that, the people who were left, you know, to be tortured more. They were probably praying they'd die like the other people did, I would guess.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then there were other rumors that there were dead bodies in the attic that were rotting amongst the living. There were some.
The stench had to be horrible from that. Did the neighbors not ever smell anything? Or,
well, I wondered that too. But again, it never mentioned anything about that. And remember, in that time period, there was a whole lot of smells that didn't bother people, you know, out on the street.
Well, because I guess they had the underground sewer system and all of that. Still do.
Right. And you also had, you know, you still had horses and buggies at that point. So you had a lot of animal life. Yeah, you had a lot of all kinds of smells going on. So people didn't, I don't think they questioned it. Not really. Not like we do now. So their corpses had been mutilated beyond recognition and their organs not all intact or even inside their bodies. Their intestines and different organs had been ripped out and tied around waists or dripping to the floor as they were hanging to the walls. I mean, so one report tells of a male slave that was so scared and afraid of her punishment that he ultimately threw himself out of a third-story window, choosing to die rather than be subjected to Madame Lalaurie's torture.
I can see that.
Yeah. And so if you look on the internet, or if you're in person there, that particular window, it was cemented up shut at the time, and it's still cemented, and you can see it today. So the nearly helpless were carried to the Cabildo, where they received medical treatment, food, and drink as much as possible. And to put it into perspective, again, the Cabildo was the seat of Spanish Colonial City Hall of New Orleans. And it's now the Louisiana State Museum Cabildo. And if you've ever paid attention or not paid attention, it's located right there along Jackson Square, adjacent to the St. Louis Cathedral. So no doubt if you've been to New Orleans, you've seen it. You've probably walked past it a million times, but that's kind of to put it into perspective. It's right there. Whenever you see the cathedral and the Jackson Square and the statue, that's where all this happened. So meanwhile, back to our story. So nearly 2,000 townspeople came to see and view these victims because they'd already been thinking that all this stuff had been going on, right? They kept thinking, oh, it's happening. Nobody's believing us. Well, right. So they came to view the victims and they were appalled by the wretched sight, really. So they started to gather at the Lalaurie mansion in the expectation that the sheriff was going to go arrest Delphine.
Mm-hmm.
And they waited and they waited, but the sheriff never arrived. Yeah, so as the day went on, it became apparent that any action was not going to happen.
Really?
So, yeah. So the crowd slowly transformed.
She was that well connected that she wasn't going to be arrested for even this torture.
That.
and murder of her slaves.
Yep. She was, well, her people, her family were in all levels of government, and they were, they were in all levels of the military, and so connected is the right word. So the crowd slowly transformed itself into a mob, and they started to take on one thought mentality, and that mentality was vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
So the mob at that point was almost about 4,000 angry townspeople, and they descended on the mansion. They ransacked and smashed the windows. They tore down doors until there was almost nothing remaining but the outside walls.
Good.
Yep. So, one informant to the police and the newspapers was Monsieur Montreal. Now, he was a spurned neighbor of Madame Lalaurie. Montreal lived next door to Delphine at the time that this fire broke out. But years before that, he'd lived there for a long time. And years before that, he suffered an unfortunate bout of unrequited love for her. Well, hey, she had a hot young husband. she wasn't interested in this old dude. So it was documented by reporters interviewing people after the fire that Montreux had made advances toward Delphine for years. And so I think he comforted himself by speaking of her in a derogatory manner, no doubt. And again, sort of stoking the tabloid of the day with even more monstrous tales of things. He was making up some things just to get his own back on her, right?
Right. But he gets revenge this way.
Exactly. But here's what's going to really piss y'all off. She got away with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, she did. She got away with it. Because gossip. Pardon?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Gossip. I know her story, too. So.
Yeah. Okay. So gossip told that she fled New Orleans during the commotion and the mob violence that followed the fire and took a coach to the waterfront and traveled by the schooner from there to Mobile, Alabama. So I guess she went up, and then from there, supposedly she went on to Paris.
Right.
So her life after 1834 fire is not very well documented, and the circumstances of her death are also unclear. She was presumed to have died in Paris due to a boar attack during a hunting accident, which, you know what? If that really happened that way, couldn't happen to a nicer girl,
huh? That's probably justice, yeah. Hopefully exactly. It hurt a lot.
Yeah, because that had to hurt if that's how it happened.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. And part of what I read, too, is that she kept wanting to come back to New Orleans, and everybody kept saying, you don't do that, they'll kill you,
Yeah.
So, so fast forward to the late 1930s, Eugene Bacchus, who served as sexton to the St. Louis Cemetery No. 1, which is a super old one that we love to go see, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he served there until 1924. He actually discovered an old cracked copper plate in Alley 4 of the cemetery. And the inscription on the plate read, I'm not going to read it in French. I'm going to read it in English, okay? So it is in French. But it basically says, Madame Lalaurie, née Marie, Delphine McCarty, deceased in Paris on the 7th of December, 1842. And it says her age, it's got a 6 there, but it doesn't give her, the tomb only is kind of washed out at that point. So I'm assuming she was in her 60s, right?
Right.
And I suspect that this marker was added to her family tomb, that there's no evidence she was really buried there or in Paris.
Right.
And at that time, nobody brought your body or dead body back.
Well,
so
it would take weeks on a boat to bring it back here. So I don't see why they would have done that.
Right. So this is my assumption that they added the plaque to a family tomb. So, but I'm sorry, y'all. She basically got away with it.
Well, I read somewhere that they did sneak her back. I don't remember where it was. I can't give a reference, but that she did sneak back for a very short time, like a few days, and then went back to Paris. I don't know how true that is because that'd be an awfully long trip for a few days, but.
Right.
She missed it so desperately. She wanted to come back home. That was home to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted back there.
Yep.
But, her children said no.
Yeah. Her kids kept saying
they're
no.
They're going to lynch you when you get back there because they're mad.
Exactly.
That you got away with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kim and I both know that, yeah, we always want to get back to New Orleans. So I can understand her wanting to come back. But at the same time, you know, I don't think she ever really did. You know, I did a lot of research on this, and I really didn't find too much of her travels after the fact. So, so to bring you up to speed now, today, the La Lurie Mansion is one of New Orleans' most famous attractions. And in the past, it served as a home for wayward boys, a school for girls, a musical conservatory, a saloon, and even an apartment building, also a furniture store. Now, in 2007, actor Nicolas Cage bought the house.
That figures. He's kind of a weirdo.
Well, you got to love the rest of this, because allegedly he never even lived in it, and he lost the home in foreclosure proceedings 2 years later. Right. Now, he paid $3.5 million for it, which, you know what, if you ask me, that's not too much, really, considering what we're talking about.
Depending on the size, and because the location is excellent. Well,
it's in the French Quarter. It's huge. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and from all that I read, it was very beautiful. Of course, you know, it was ransacked. It's been changed all over the place. So anyhow, later he lost it in foreclosure and they sold it off at $2.1 million. So he lost some money there and somebody got a deal of a steal, right? Mm-hmm. So although many visitors to New Orleans pass the house and view it from outside, it's a private residence now and tourists are not permitted inside. Throughout all its different incarnations, many of the building's owners have experienced some form of misery or another associated with the house.
I was going to ask if there are ghosts in that house. There's got to be slave ghosts in that house.
Well,
you know,
I think this is probably why the ownership turns over so quickly, because not necessarily just ghosts, but all kinds of bad stuff constantly happening. I mean, at one point when it said there was a little girl's, it was a girl's school, and it had been integrated school for, you know, integrated, but then they turned it into a all African American school. And these little girls, again, in the 1800s, they would, I don't know if they were really making this up or not, but they would come to their headmistress with scratches and all kinds of things. And whenever the headmistress would ask, well, what happened? You know, they're like, well, the lady did it and things like that. But
yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
So there's a lot of ghosty stories that go along with this house. That's a whole nother kind of dimension to this. But in 1894, when the house was converted into apartments, there was a tenant that lived there, and he was actually brutally murdered in his room. And they found his belongings ransacked as if someone had gone through them. Now, the police just assumed that he was a victim of a robbery, even though nothing of value was missing. Nothing was gone. Mm-hmm. So, but an interesting account regarding his murder deals with the police interviewing neighbors about his disappearance. And one of his friends claimed that he was having problems in this house with what he referred to as spirits and sprites.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So his friend wrote it off as his imagination running wild with him. But also the guy claimed that his friend had told him there was a demon in the house and that the demon wasn't going to rest until this man had met his end. And so he did. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. In a sick and twisted kind of way. That's, yeah.
Oh, but
can it have been the friend who actually did it to make his, you know, prophecy come true? Or
probably. I mean, you know, back in the day, you could probably make up all kinds of stories and get away with it. Look what she got away with, you know?
Yeah, really. What time period was that? Was it early 1800s that she did all this stuff?
Let's see. Yeah, it was the early 1800s because she was going through husbands like water there for a minute.
Right, like I can't remember the exact date, but like 1830s or something like that.
Yeah, she'd purchased the property and 1831.
Okay.
So they were starting to see problems in 1833.
Okay.
They were already starting to take the slaves away from her back and forth and back and forth. You know?
Right. Yeah. I read about that they would take them and then her friends would buy them
back
and sell them back to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what was happening. Mm-hmm.
I also saw somewhere that they dug up that back garden that in the backyard of the house or wherever, you know, the courtyard,
right,
dug it up and found a lot of other bodies that Did you see that when you were?
Yeah. Well, they did say that they found all kinds of bodies and they couldn't even really count them. They were speculating anywhere between 50 to 100, but she wasn't in that house long enough.
For them all to be hers?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. She was pretty prolific. Yeah.
She was that brutal. Do you think the doctor knew she was doing this stuff and that's why he took off? He didn't want to lose his social status by turning her in, so he just took off?
I think he did know, because every time the police would come, he would tell them, you know, y'all need to mind your own business. Basically, we're better than y'all. You need to go away and, you know, leave us alone.
Right.
Looking down his nose at him and stuff like that. But then I think he just got tired of the whole deal with her because she was so much older than him.
She was a drama queen.
Yeah. Yeah. But she was also, she was just kind of nuts.
Maybe he was afraid she was going to get rid of him too, because I'm going to be, well, I mean, people died early back then, but you know, it's kind of weird when women lose two or three husbands, unless they were a lot older than her or something like that.
Well, the second one died in Cuba. They didn't really say what happened. They alluded that he was ill, but they really didn't confirm that. And I'm not sure what the first one died of at all, but it just said, you know, he bit the big one, moving on.
Yeah.
So, the next one?
I want a younger one this time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
Young is the way to go, by the way.
Mm-hmm. But let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you.
On a personal side note.
Well, Kim can do a story on that all on her own. but I wanted to mention something interesting, because this goes to possibly being a armchair psychiatrist. You know, after hearing all of this, there may be a few reasons to her disciplining her slaves to the extreme, because at that time in history, her family, remember, they were Spanish/French, and there was a whole lot of referring to her as Creole. Well, what we think of as Creole nowadays is mixed. It's always meant mixed, but we think more of
mixed race.
Well, yes, it's a mixed race, but we also think of it more of as a African-American mixed with a Caucasian person, which that's not really the case. Creole means a mixture of anything, really. And so they kept referring to her as Creole, but, you know, it was a mixture, again, of the French and the Spanish. So,
okay.
So
I did not know that.
Yes, yes. That's why she was so, she looked white.
Because she was.
Yeah. Yeah. But they kept referring to her as Creole anyway. So.
Right.
So her family, because they came from this military situation, they were in this perpetual state of terror about the slave revolt to the South in Santo Domingo.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually that revolt led to the creation of the Republic of Haiti.
Right.
Where, you know, they rose up and they took it naturally. Her family and her lifestyle were concerned with this. But also, as Louisiana men, they were part of a long tradition of keeping free women of color, usually light-skinned ones, and they called these ladies places. I hope that's right. Or basically, they were considered concubines.
Okay. Right? Jeez, mistresses.
They're their mistresses. Yeah, because, you know, many of them kept mistresses on the side. That was no big deal. Right. It was real common. So while they don't marry these women, but many of them had children, and they often lived with them, cohabitated with them. And Delphine's uncle, for example, spent 54 years with a free woman of color and had 7 children with
her. Wow.
Yeah, living openly with her in St. Bernard Parish.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now, more importantly, perhaps, in consideration of what kind of a woman that Delphine turned out to be, is that her father also had a free quadroon mistress by the name of Sophie Moussant. For those of y'all who do not know, a quadroon was a person with 1/4 African and 3/4 European ancestry.
I had never heard that. Mm-hmm. That's a new one.
Yep.
You're teaching me things.
Well, hey, there you go. I just found all of this interesting because it said also, so to rub a little bit more salt in the wound for Delphine, they named her as godmother of the child her father had with Sophie, which also made her a half-sister. And to make things more complicated, they also called this other sister Delphine as well.
Oh, nice.
I know. So, you know, all the names in the world, you got to call her that. So to a more modern mind, you might cast a sort of Freudian light on Delphine's later infamy, right? You know, was she torturing her slaves later out of anger against her dad, or, you know, for taking up with Sophie, or was she doing it because of her third husband, Louis?
Right.
You know, I think that that'll probably be some oversimplified reason for her behavior, because at that time, the politics in Louisiana was pretty radical, and it was the racial politics of Louisiana and was under Spanish rule.
Okay.
Where, in fact, free people of color had a status roughly equivalent, though not entirely equal, to that of whites.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
good. I mean, didn't realize that New Orleans was so progressive as compared to the rest of the South at the time.
Well, they really were. They were so far, I mean, considering they were a lot farther ahead. And they also had, even though they still had slaves, they had rules and regulations to protect them, not to be abused, obviously. So it's not all clear that Delphine would have classified these relatives of hers as deserving of the contempt that she usually reserved for her slaves. But Creoles had lesser status than whites, but they were still not generally called blacks either. Now, another interesting point was that, like most slaveholders, the McCartys periodically granted emancipation to older slaves. Now, her maiden name was McCarty. Mm-hmm. That was her daddy's name. So on occasion, Delphine herself had had to arrange for the freedom of her slaves. Her second husband left instructions upon his death that an elderly servant named Jean-Louis was to be set free, and she did let him go.
Right.
Good. So, you know, you can draw your own conclusions about how truly evil she was for that time period and her mental state and her fear of the climate of the world. But I think, basically, she was pretty awful.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I hope her death was painful. I hope the board, you know, jabbed her 3 or 4 times.
Well, you know what? I if you know anything about that sort of thing, I know Kim knows about it, but we can tell you that that was probably a pretty awful death if she was attacked by a boar. And basically what that means is she was eaten alive by a, what do you think?
Giant pig.
Yeah, 500-pound pig with
that
big old...
That can get huge. We have a pig problem back home.
Yeah, and you know what?
They're 700-800 pounds.
Yeah, they get... And they're aggressive and they're scary.
Yes,
and
they're very aggressive.
Yeah, the same thing in Florida when I was there. They run wild. The state will allow you to, you know, shoot them because they are. They're terrible. But back then, I betcha they snapped her and it was just probably everything she deserved in that one go. A cosmic rebalance. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think God looked at her and said, yeah, it's time. And,
Yeah. You think you got away? Watch me, Nero. Watch me work.
Yep.
Hold my beer.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But
that's what
all.
She deserved.
Exactly. Well, it was a pretty, you know, it was a pretty interesting story. Kim and I both kind of know a little bit about it because we've been to New Orleans all our lives. It's one of our favorite places in the whole wide world.
Every chance we get. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had some stories that we could tell y'all. But nothing even compares to this. Thank God.
Yeah.
So, but this was by request, and I hope we fulfilled y'all's wildest dreams in it. And if you have any more
some
requests,
of your nightmares, I
yeah,
guess.
Something like that. If you have any more requests, please send them to us. We're happy to do them, and we're so glad y'all are supporting us. It's been awesome, and we're having a great time, and we hope y'all are too.
We're loving it.
So we will see you again on our Forensic Fridays. Kim has something great for you.
Yep.
And then on our longer shows on Tuesdays. So,
all righty then.
Until then,
this was
bye,
great.
Y'all. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
That's our episode for this week. Thanks for listening to us, and we hope you join us again every Tuesday for an exciting new episode.
Head on over to our blog at kudzukillerspodcast.blogspot.com and leave a comment or your ideas about the subject this week.
Or follow us on Twitter at kudzukillerspod, and you can shout out to us anytime or send a question for our next Q&A.
Yes, ma'am. And we'd love you forever if you leave us a review on whatever podcast blows your skirt up. We'd love to hear what you think about your show.
If you'd like to become a part of the Kudzu Killers family, hop on over to patreon.com/KudzuKillersPodcast and take a look at the goodies you get when you show us some love.
That's right. And if you love our music, check out Jody Jennings Music on Facebook, SoundCloud, or all social media and streaming music platforms.
So until next week,
or if we decide to shoot out a mini episode,
bye y'all.
Bye, y'all.